We start today's program with Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton. As the City Council gets ready to reconsider pension reform, including pension spiking, tomorrow morning at 10. Mayor Stanton, first of all, you are always someone who's been talking about regional economy, the importance of that. Where does the Mexico City office for the City of Phoenix fit in on that?
Well, I would argue it's exactly consistent. It is creating as many opportunities as possible for our local business. And if we're going to create the economy that we need here locally, we need to think and act regionally, meaning the various cities in the valley need to be working together, not against each other. So no more of these what I would describe as self-defeating subsidies. You haven't even heard any talk in that regard, certainly during my time as mayor. So we as a region need to act as a team. I'd also argue that we as a region need to do as much local purchasing as possible. City of Phoenix did pass an ordinance ensuring that local business would get much more of the business from the city. If you have a product or service and you're a local business, we're going to buy from you as long as you are an affordable price. I'm really excited about a local purchasing ordinance. And then we need to look for as many business opportunities around the globe for our local businesses, particularly small and medium-sized businesses. People that are working their tails off to create value for their business may not have the time or wherewithal to understand international opportunities for your business. That's where we can provide real value. If the City of Phoenix has a trade office in Mexico City, for example, we can be searching far and wide for opportunities for our small and medium-sized businesses here locally, opportunities that they may not even know about. So I've led many trade delegations to Mexico since I've been mayor. I've been down there 5 times. We're creating new opportunities down there, but we also heard that if you really want to create value for the people of your community, you're going to have a more permanent presence. San Antonio has done it, and they're way ahead of us from a trade perspective. Texas and California generally are ahead of Arizona, and guess what? I'm a competitor. I want to do right by my local business, and so I want to catch up to those other areas and even pass them up to create as many trade opportunities for our local businesses as possible.
Well, considering the importance of Mexico as a trading partner, do you think the state has not taken enough of a lead on that, and that's one of the reasons you're acting, or is this solely because this is going to benefit the City of Phoenix?
City of Phoenix has got to be a leader, and we lead in a variety of areas. We lead in transportation. We lead in sustainability. We lead in supporting our neighborhoods and the arts. And so we're moving. Now, I hope as many partners as possible want to come on board with us. And so this is a team effort. But I'm not going to make it a team effort where City of Phoenix is waiting for others to come on board. We're moving forward, and we're going to show success, and we're going to want that. We know that other entities are going to want to come on board, regional entities, State of Arizona, GPEC, Arizona Commerce Authority. We are a team, and we're going to play as a team, but we're not going to do it by waiting. We're going to do it by leading. And so I look forward to finding as many partners as possible for a trade office. City Phoenix is not going to act in a way other than what's in the best interest of our region as a state, as we should. But I think Phoenix has a unique leadership role as the largest city in the state, one of the largest cities in the country, and we've got to exercise our leadership role. And this Mexico trade office is one example where Phoenix leads.
One of the key economic drivers of the Valley has been Sky Harbor Airport, and this U.S. Airways-American Airlines merger on hold, at least for now. Why have you come out in favor of saying, hey, DOJ, let this merger go forward?
Well, first off, it is unfortunate that U.S. Air, there are going to be some headquarter jobs lost. But big picture, and my job is to look at the big picture, one of the greatest things we can do for our economy, particularly if we want to grow internationally, is have a growing and thriving and efficiently run Sky Harbor Airport. And as you know, U.S. Air and Southwest have about 80% of the flights in and out of Sky Harbor. And we don't want to do anything that's going to put our airlines that fly so much in and out of Sky Harbor at any kind of competitive disadvantage. DOJ has already allowed many mergers to occur. We've worked closely with U.S. Air. We know that as this merger goes through, they've made commitments to us here locally about keeping this as the major Western hub for this new airline. We know that when we get these new American planes, they're going to have a greater capacity to fly internationally, significantly increasing our opportunities for international flights. We have a plan to grow Sky Harbor Airport, and we know this new merged airline, we want it to be successful. We want it to continue to grow at Sky Harbor Airport. So I look at it strictly as what is in the best interest of our business community here locally, and a thriving merged airline flying more and more flights in and out of Sky Harbor to new places, including international destinations, is great for our local business community, and that's why I came out on this issue. It would have been easy to stay silent, but you got to stand up for your local business community. That's what I'm trying to do.
You know, in an ideal world, would it be great for this hometown airline to be strong enough to stay on its own and keep the headquarters here? And you're basically saying, in order to do the best we can, I have to advocate for this.
In a perfect world, I wish there was, 50 airlines that flew all over the place and maximized the opportunity. That's not the world we live in. And when you lead, you got to operate in the world that we actually live in. And US Air believes that this new merge airline is the best way to compete with these other merged airlines that have already gone before them, and that competition that allows for Sky Harbor to grow and thrive and have new flights in and out of it. And again, they've committed to keep Sky Harbor as their primary western hub of this new airline. That is great for our business community. I can tell you, I do economic development recruiting all the time, and one of the biggest challenges we have right now in terms of recruiting international business to come to our region is the lack of direct flights to Asia and Europe. And increasing those number of international flights is hugely important to our local business community. And having additional flights in and out of Sky Harbor is incredibly important to our local business community so that they can grow and offer their products and services around the country and world. And having a merged airline under the existing environment that we are in relative to the airline industry, a crazy industry that I don't fully have my mind around. but in order for us to successfully compete in that environment, I trust that the new merge airline provides us the best opportunity for our local business community. And I want to make that absolutely clear. The reason why I came out along with the other mayors of the hub cities is because we all believe that for our local business communities, this is the right approach.
Thursday morning, there's supposed to be a special city council vote related to pension reform. First of all, give us your perspective on the importance of pension reform and what should we be looking for on Thursday morning?
Well, we had a vote the week before, and you can see we were a very divided council, and we were 3 votes for one side, 4 votes, and I was on the 4 vote side for the approach that came out of the ad hoc subcommittee on pension spiking improvements, and then there were a couple of votes to kind of delay all decisions to a later time. Look, our city has taken significant steps on pension reform. Back in March, the voters of the city, if you remember, it was only last March that 80% of the voters of the city of Phoenix supported significant pension reform that will save almost $600 million over the next 20-25 years within our city. Now we're looking at the issue of pension spiking and fairness. And we want to make sure that our system, not only we have a system that saves money for the people of the city, but also is as fair as possible. And if the proposal that came out of the ad hoc committee passes on Thursday, I don't know if it will or not, that's why we have public meetings, is to take testimony, listen to people, and see where the votes go. If that passes, it'll be one of the strongest pension spiking reforms in the entire country. We have certain constitutional limitations. Some people want to take it even further. We have to be very careful not to pass something that will result in lost litigation and all the costs that go along with that. But it will eliminate pension spiking moving forward. We know it's going to save the city a lot of money, and we're going to do it in a way where the city also is able to keep its word. Striking the right balance, I think, is what's occurring with this vote. And again, that's what's going to happen on Thursday morning, and we're getting lots of people, strong opinions both for and against, and that's what democracy is all about.
Are you concerned that if there's too much reform, that could make Phoenix less competitive?
Yeah, we need to make sure that our overall compensation package is competitive. But I think we got to do it in as transparent a way possible. This is not changing the compensation system. The question really is what should be pensionable? And we want to make sure our pension system is as transparent as possible. I think in all fairness, over the course of decades now, we've created a system that isn't as transparent as it should be. By enacting pension spiking reform, we're going to make the system much more transparent. It's going to be incumbent upon myself and the other council members to ensure that ultimately we still have a overall compensation package that is competitive, that people who with the talented people want to have their careers at the city. We don't lose talented people. We can still attract talented people, but I don't think you do that through pension spiking. I think you make sure you just have an overall competitive compensation package.
Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton, it's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein, and now with me for a few minutes to discuss pension reform, pension spiking, is Phoenix City Councilman Jim Waring, who represents the city's 2nd District. Councilman, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity to be on.
Good to have you with us. So what do you think is going to happen on Thursday? Is it going to be different than what we've seen in past weeks?
Well, obviously, I just caught the tail end of the mayor's discussion. We do have a little bit of a three-pronged group. We've got three of us are pretty staunch fiscal conservatives. We want to see more reforms that have been put forth by the subcommittee. I think you have two fellas who don't want to do anything, and then the other four who want to do what I wouldn't even necessarily call reform. But they are making some changes that maybe move in the right direction. But as far as I'm concerned, don't do nearly enough. This is not a new issue. A lot of the pension spiking is allowed by the labor contracts that I and three others voted against just a year and a half ago. So it's not like this just sprung out of thin air. A lot of this has been going on for a long time. I think what's going to happen is some modest reforms will pass tomorrow. That's at least sort of what I'm hearing in the halls. Mm. But should it? Is that something we should vote for? I'm a little concerned that might just end the discussion. Mayor talked about the thing that went to the ballot in March, and I voted for it. There was discussion about whether I should or not. I opted for the $600 million in savings. But what's left unsaid, what voters never got a chance to really talk about or see, is that there were other plans that would have saved $1.2 billion or switched to a 401k. And I never thought we had the robust discussion about those things that we should have. I voted against David Cavazos' pay raise because there was a relative uproar about Frank Fairbanks' contract. But then what's left unsaid is we do a pension spiking review committee, and it comes out with its findings. And then the very next week, Ed Zuercher is a fine person. He could be a great city manager. He's our interim right now. But his compensation package winds up being almost exactly the same as what caused a lot of the furor in the first place. And people voted for it. I didn't, but I did find that rather incongruous under the circumstance that we're talking about this one week, and then the next week we're doling out the same benefits that have caused problems and have been discussed in the paper and on your show in the past.
I
question whether we're moving in the right direction when I see that kind of evidence.
I think the employee contract issue is an interesting one to bring up because there are a lot of people who are offended by this concept of pension spiking, and then there are others who say, yes, I'm offended by pension spiking, but why should those who signed a contract in good faith and maybe worked for the city for decades, why should they be then flipped around by this idea that the city is in these tough economic straits? How do you balance that out when the need for reform?
I'm very aware of the fairness issue. I was elected 2 years ago. I voted against the one group of contracts and all the pay raises because we've given pay raises to judges and so forth. As we've gone along here, at a time when the city is still hurting and taxpayers are still hurting, our economy hasn't been as robust as we would like to see or predicted the last year or so. So certainly in my time on the council. So for me, am I wedded to the bad ideas of the past? I think the mayor was absolutely right talking about the transparency, and I appreciate the fact that he addressed it because it came up in the subcommittees. It's certainly been discussed by me in meetings with staff. Some of this stuff was done just to hide how much city employees were making. And I'm not saying they're all getting rich, but what I am saying is this, some of this at least, was definitely done as a way so we wouldn't have so many people making $100,000 a year, so it wouldn't be clear really what was going on. There's no other reason for all the gimmicks and tricks that are in some of these. I think people were shocked. And again, I enjoyed working with David Cavazos, but I did vote against his contract. And part of the reason I voted against it is there was a lot of bells and whistles in there that I think a lot of the council didn't understand or didn't realize was going to be in there that's coming to light now. His pension is basically exactly what his salary was a year ago at this time. It's within, I think, $1,000. That's pretty hard to explain to people, particularly when the number is well over $200,000. For city employees, I mean, they're not creating a business, you know, and so forth. So, you know, I've been a little frustrated with what's gone on. I think some people might interpret this as sort of a protest vote if we vote against the current plan, and I don't want to speak for other council members. It'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, but I hope, if nothing else, we at least have a discussion. I think some light has been shined on this issue. I think, shows like yours and the newspaper have done a really good job of getting this out, and I think part of it is breaking through the very hidden aspects of these plans that I think were hidden for a specific reason. And as far as the upper management, the stuff that isn't negotiated with the unions, those are at-will employees. We don't have to do any of this. It's been the practice since, I believe, it's 1996 when some of this started. But as a new council member, why would I even run for office if I can't make changes? I understand people will say, well, it's not fair to me, but it also wouldn't be fair to me to say, oh, well, you're beholden to the bad ideas of the past. You can only add to them. You can't take them back. I don't think that's a reasonable argument from my perspective as an elected official.
What do you think it will take? Let's say this incremental reform goes through that you're not overly enthusiastic about. What do you think it'll take to keep the idea fresh in people's minds so that the discussion doesn't just end with that particular reform?
Oh, we're going to have more retirees. And we're going to have more retirees who are, you know, some have said we're going to have this mass exodus from the city. We're not. We're too good of a location. It's too good of a place to work. The benefits are still too good compared to what you can get in the private sector. And I think that's an underlying point in all of this, is that it's going to be hard to go out and have Intel or someone else, you know, give you the same benefits. You know, the days of pensions like this that get paid in perpetuity and you're retiring in your early 50s, that's done, I think, more or less in the private sector. Are the salaries as high? No, but they're definitely edging way upwards over the years. People forget, yes, there was an employee give back during the tough times, but really that wasn't so much a concession as a way to avoid big layoffs. If City of Phoenix had been a business, or a lot of states and cities around the country for that matter, it probably would have gone under the way the finances look. So realistically, you know, I understand that there were give backs, but what's left unsaid is that there was a lot of pay raise in the 10 years prior, and a lot of hiring in the 10 years prior. And so I think the city was somewhat overstaffed. We've cut the number of employees down by about 2,500 over the last few years, but our approvals with the public, not politicians' approvals, but the actual approvals of city performance, which does get polled, is up. And I think there's a reason for that. I think there were too many cooks in the kitchen, and a lot of them, you know, made good salaries, and now they've retired. The idea that everybody's going to flee if we make some changes, I don't think is right. I think we should stop some of the things, you know, to say we're going to limit it to cell phone allowances and car allowances won't be counting on the pension. Well, they never should have been counted anyway. That's an easy one. If that's going to be the crux of tomorrow's vote, I just don't think that's just not going far enough, not even close.
Councilman, finally, maybe a 30-second answer or so. You talked about a couple of councilmen referring to Councilman Nowakowski and Johnson who you think don't really want to do anything. So how could that potentially affect tomorrow's outcome?
And I guess I shouldn't say nothing. They want to do it in negotiations, but we've seen how negotiations have gone in the past. If they refuse to vote yes, then I think we're still at a stalemate. And from my perspective, that keeps the concept out there. And maybe they have to come to us for votes to get something passed, and we get tougher reforms. We get some real transparency. That would be ideal. I don't know if that'll happen. Like I said, I'm hearing that maybe one or the two gentlemen you just mentioned might be voting for it, but it's just hearsay, so I don't know if that's true. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Phoenix City Councilman Jim Waring, who represents the city's 2nd District. Councilman, thanks for the time, as always.
Hey, I really appreciate being on. Thank you.